Welcome to the 20% True Podcast, Season 3, the Chicago Center for Supernatural Support. This is Episode 2, Derek. I'm Carolyn Rahaman. Derek Nash was a movie star, a famous movie star. You've probably heard of him. His chiseled jaw was on billboards and buses and posters in bedrooms across the country. He's done a bunch of dreamy white guys with stubble movies, a couple rom-coms, and one where he drove a car and shot at things while driving a car. He did a quirky sci-fi show where he was the swashbuckling captain of a ragtag band of misfits aboard a dumpy spaceship that was falling apart. A bunch of fans still wear his character's blue leather jackets to conventions. Derek loves conventions. He was the main character's doofy love interest on Pumpkin Spice Land, the half-hour sitcom about the totally not Starbucks. He initially signed on for 4 episodes, but they extended it to keep him around all season. That was the season it won its Emmy, not that Derek had anything to do with it or, much to do with it. Pumpkin Spice Land was convention adjacent, so a bunch of people would come up to him in their Pumpkin Spice t-shirts and yell at him, still upset that his character took that job in Iowa instead of marrying Abby, but that's just how TV works. Then he hit it big. And when you hit it big, you get to go to even more conventions. So here he was at DICON. He took a picture with a dad wearing the iconic blue leather jacket of Captain Lance Ferrigan. The man's 6-month-old was dressed as the ship's dog, Beagle Eagle. Then he took a picture with a pair of teen boys who couldn't agree which one should be Captain Ferrigan. So they both were. And then they said something about how one of them was from the Mirror Universe, but you couldn't tell which one it was. "Clearly it's me," said Derek. He grinned and winked. One of the guys choked on his own breath. He had a silver Sharpie and a black Sharpie in his pocket, which he used to sign movie posters and action figures and t-shirts and people's arms. You see, there's movie star famous, and then there's superhero movie franchise famous. Longtime readers of the Clash Star comics had descended on his Twitter feed to tell him he was too pretty to be Clash Star. Like, that was an insult? He'd been familiar with the character, but made sure to study up, and then made sure to be caught at an outdoor cafe, reading a stack of obscure one-shots. He made sure to win the trivia contest he and his co-star did as part of the publicity campaign. His random foyers into Clash Star textual analysis during interviews exploded across Tumblr. Girls started referring to him as their husband. You could buy his action figure. And everyone did. Meaning, he signed 100 Clash Star action figures at DICON. He only signed 4 Ferrigan action figures because there were only like 100 of those floating around, and literally millions of the Clash Star ones. One guy, surprisingly, showed up with a Tag Lawson action figure from the movie where Derek drove the car and shot at people while driving the car. You know, that one. Kudos to that guy. Derek hadn't even known they'd made those things. He took a picture with an 8-year-old dressed as Clash Star, and a 9-year-old dressed as Clash Star, and a 10-year-old dressed as Clash Star, 5 teen boys dressed as Clash Star, a middle-aged guy dressed as Clash Star, a guy pushing 90 dressed as Clash Star. The old guy was by far his favorite, but don't tell any of the kids. He took a picture with a young woman dressed as Captain Ferrigan, then with a young lady dressed as Valeria, the femme fatale from the Clash Star movie. Then he took a picture with a young woman in jeans and a Star Wars t-shirt, then another. And another. There was a panel for Clash Star's production company, where Derek sat with Brian Raddick, Peter St. Clair, Eli Wilkinson, and Lana Estrada, who played Maria Cortez. All of them with their plastic name tags with the DICON Radish logo. The Captain Cortez movie was going to come out that summer, with a Striker movie in the works, and everyone was already talking about the crossover potential. "I'd just be so embarrassed for Clash Star in that movie," Derek said into the mic, cutting in before his director could say some non-something. "Cortez is so much more effective than Clash Star. It'd just be like a Cortez movie with Clash Star in the background going, 'Whoa, no way, yeah, get him!' And then there'd be an explosion and you'd go, 'Ooh, she's the best. You should all go see Cortez too.'" "And Clash Star too," his director cut in. Derek waved a dismissive hand at him. He'd be hearing from his publisher later. At the end of the table, Lana tried to cover her laugh and failed, pressing her head to the table in a move that would launch a thousand gifts. A question about the Stryker movie, a question for Lana, then a kid stood up and asked Derek about Canada. Because of course someone would ask Derek about Canada, it was inevitable. His personal life eclipsing the real story here, which was of course Cortez 2 in theaters July 5th. His muscles tensed, then stayed tense even as the question ended with just a thinly veiled insinuation that his injuries might have rendered him less than capable to be shirtless and kick people suspended 20 feet off the ground. The question passed without mention of the moon. It was only because he was such a good actor, thank you very much, that he kept all the color in his face, and his voice didn't shake as he answered. I really appreciate everyone's concern, and all the kind thoughts and get-well messages everyone has sent. I'm back at 100%, and my injuries didn't affect the film schedule or my ability to play Clash Star. Clash Star 2 still has overly ambitious stunts. Everybody laughed. And the makeup department did a great job covering up my scars. They are miracle workers. Yeah, Lana said. They make it look like you have abs. Derek's workouts and the formation of his abs to prepare for the Clash Star role was excessively documented on Instagram. Derek clutched his chest in feigned offense. He appreciated the distraction. It eased the nausea from his lungs, but the bitter aftertaste lingered. His director gave the boilerplate speech about how the whole cast and crew had rallied around Derek after his injury, and how Derek was a trooper and a professional. Derek zoned out as the panel managed the rest of the questions without him. The Canadian wind flickered against his face. Gray clouds blurred around the edges of his vision. His scar tightened, tingled, itched. He laced his fingers together under the table and squeezed. The fjords, they'd said. The lush forests, they'd said. The turbulent ocean views. That, along with his publicist's plan to emphasize Derek's outdoorsiness, meant that when he managed a miraculous 36-hour reprieve from the filming in Newfoundland, he hyped up a mini backpacking trip on his Instagram and set out. Along with a small group of Belgian tourists and a guide, he hiked along the edge of the cliffs plunging into the sea, enjoying the emptiness and the untamed scenery and harsh wind. His boots squished into thick grass. Blisters burned along his palms as he pitched his own tent. His legs ached, an active, productive soreness, wholly foreign from the weird cramps that set in after a stint in a harness in front of a green screen. He and his group sat around a crackling campfire that evening, the smell of smoke seeping into the air, and watched the sunset, oranges striping the sky. When it set, they applauded. Unable to sleep, he got up in the night to breathe the wind that didn't smell like brand new tent. He walked along the edge of the cliff until he couldn't see the campsite anymore. The moon was bright as a spotlight and big enough that he could almost reach out and touch it. He tried, poking up into the sky with his finger. The northern lights began to dance. He'd never seen them before, and he stood in awe, barely breathing the freezing air. He wished the moon wasn't so bright, washing out the scene. With all that he'd achieved, this, out in the middle of nowhere, made him feel truly lucky. That's when something tackled him. They crashed to the ground, the thing snarling, snapping, spitting. He couldn't see what it was, but with its weight it must be a man. A rabid wild man. Or a bear. The thing stabbed into him, slashing, biting, tearing at his clothes and his arms, held up to shield himself. Maybe he yelled something. But it just kept pressing, digging for his stomach, his chest, which tensed in fear as he curled into a ball. And no one was coming, and he was going to die on this hill. He grabbed the thing and rolled, trying to throw it off, but it didn't come off, and they were at the edge of the cliff, and they were falling, and then they hit the water. Salt burned the gash down his side, but his attacker was gone. Not that he cared, because the surf tossed him, rolled him, blood clouding the water, salt blasting up his nose. Applause brought him back to the panel. He smiled a big smile, waved at the crowd, and stepped backstage, where he drank all of a big bottle of water. He pictured the hiking group's horror at finding his tent empty. He pictured how he'd washed up on a rocky beach, how he'd been found and rushed to a hospital. It was big news that he'd been attacked by a wild animal while being outdoorsy and adventurous. It delayed production 2 days, and he had to take it easy on the stunts for 6 weeks, which he finagled down to 2. It was big news again the next month when he announced that he had to face his fears. He knew something was wrong, and he had this absurd suspicion what it was. No, it was too out there to believe, but if he was right, if, which he wasn't, it was too dangerous not to take precautions. He needed to be away from people, far away, in the wilderness. And that thought made his ludicrous suspicion more solid, because maybe someone else with the same churning in their gut had had the same plan. He packed up a new bag and set out. Alone this time, even though he'd felt queasy and mildly feverish. Even though everyone told him to bring a guide, and a brave few souls offered to go with him. He'd return the next morning after a night in the wild. He'd mugged for the cameras waiting outside his hotel, pretending he was triumphant, pretending he was victorious over nature and his own fears, and everything could go back to normal. After all, he was a superhero. In his hotel room, he'd thrown up in the bathroom. With his sweaty cheek pressed to the tile floor and his teeth chattering, he'd called Grant. "Don't say anything," he said. "Don't tell me I'm crazy until I've told the whole story." "No one's going to recast you." Derek snapped up to see Lana standing in front of him. He was backstage, an empty water bottle in his hand. There wasn't a floor tile in sight. "We really are all behind you," she continued. "That's not just PR." He smiled. "Thanks." It would suck to be recast. Not just professionally, but also, what would he do with himself? How would he stay busy? That's the real reason he didn't take a break after the incident. Not because he was worried about his job security, but because he couldn't stand being in a hospital room alone with his own thoughts. He did better in a crowd. Better when he was the charming superhero and no one mentioned wolves. Derek loved conventions. This place, Grant said, for probably the sixth time since calling the center in Chicago. "Boring," she said. "I can't get over it. They must be doing all sorts of things we never thought of." From the passenger seat in Grant's rental car, Derek contemplated what a stupid name U.S. Cellular Field was for a baseball stadium as they passed it. The cement barricades around the highway giving him only fleeting glimpses. "That or they don't know what they're talking about," Derek said. Grant waved that away. "I'm sure they do. They're professionals." "Professional werewolf keepers? That is not a thing. They're full of it. I bet it's a weird club for people who are into werewolf roleplay." Grant took a breath before answering. The breath put upon enough to be a sigh, but too restrained for Derek to get away with calling it one. "We have to at least check it out. If they're full of it, they're full of it. If not..." Derek didn't have an argument, but he never liked how when things got rough, Grant became the optimistic one. Some reasonable pessimism seemed prudent at this point. And wasn't that just the kind of thing Grant would say any other day? It was almost like he wasn't taking this seriously, like he didn't get it. Derek ground those thoughts down before they could take root. Grant was a rock, and crying, "No one understands my pain," was just petty. And in all honesty, it did look like the center might be legit. Grant did as excessive of an online search as he had when Derek had first announced he was a werewolf. And that time, Grant had unearthed a ward from somewhere in the bowels of Reddit. So Grant considered himself a pro. Then, when he thought enough time had passed, not to make it look too obvious, he'd looked up August Green, finding that she had degrees in social work, which made her seem legit too. And look legit. Grant found her photo, a red-haired woman whose photo had been taken just a second before she was ready, her smile mid-stretch, her eyes surprised. Grant had kept the picture open in a tab throughout the rest of his investigations. She'd worked on a range of projects. Medical access for homeless populations, homework help and college/career counseling for LGBT teens kicked out of their homes, therapy for the homebound elderly. Except for the center, her professional history had no mention of the supernatural. And although the center was upfront about its mission, it could be taken as a joke. Grant had pointed out that probably worked in its favor. In short, Grant was smitten, and that's really all Derek needed to know. He just needed to make sure the smittenness didn't lead to carelessness that led Derek to maiming a bunch of people. "I've got a good feeling about this," Grant said again as they turned off the highway. Grant had asked one of the assistant producers for directions. He knew how to work Google Maps, but he liked to confirm everything all the time because he was consistently a huge pain in the ass to travel with. He hadn't given the AP the exact address of the center, but the general area, and the look the AP had given him, and the long pause afterwards had said enough, even before she said, "Maybe you should avoid that particular neighborhood." Grant had pivoted easily to spouting some nonsense about research, until the PA said the Google directions were probably fine. Grant had smiled and thanked her, and then once they were out of earshot, frowned at Derek. I'm concerned about the level of racism demonstrated by the production staff. I hope the writers feel differently. The show is set near there. Now I feel like we probably should get to know the area. The first stoplight after they got off the highway, a guy came up to their window and tried to sell them socks. Grant smiled and waved his apologies. They passed the center the first time and had to double back, craning their necks to check the building numbers. It was a seemingly abandoned storefront. The front windows tinted black, but there on the door were the words, Chicago Center for Supernatural Support. Parts of a few of the letters had peeled off. They circled the block to find the center. I went pretty far back, almost into the residential area behind the main street. And then there was a fenced-off parking lot with an open gate and a sign warning that cars not for the center would be towed at owner's expense. Grant parked next to a gray sedan. They sat unspeaking for a good long moment before Grant unbuckled his seatbelt and stepped out. Derek followed on his heels, pulling on a baseball cap. There was a jitter under his skin, a nervousness that made him want to tug on his ear, a nervous tic that 10 years ago his agent had told him to ditch or be ditched. They circled to the front of the building, where Grant rang a doorbell, which buzzed sharply like an intercom. Derek cupped his hands around his eyes to try to see inside through the tinted windows. He could not. The intercom crackled, "Hello?" And Grant straightened. "Hello, we are here for the full moon. Your name?" Derek leaned in before Grant could say anything. "Rex Lexington." There was enough of a pause for them to think that the person on the other side of the intercom was going to ignore them. But then the door buzzed as it unlocked, and they were admitted inside. The waiting room was nice. The walls were wood-paneled, and a pair of well-used but not gross sofas sat on either side of the room. There was a coffee table with a stack of magazines. Time, Good Housekeeping, Highlights for Kids. On one wall was a framed quilt, so intricately pieced that it looked like a watercolor. On the other was a bulletin board of postcards and flyers for group therapy, with tabs ripped from the bottom and a single glossy poster for the Steppenwolf season. The young woman behind the reception desk was staring at them with her jaw hanging. Her phone rested in her hands, but she hadn't pulled herself from her distraction yet to start typing and taking pictures. Fan-freaking-tastic. Within the hour, everyone would know that Derek Nash was a werewolf. No, they'd think he was doing research for a part. That was his story. He was fine. Except everyone knew what his latest role was. He played a Chicago cop on a dramatic TV show, working for the first time with his bestie. Most people thought werewolves didn't exist, so maybe they'd all think he'd lost it and thought he was a werewolf. And was that PR nightmare better or worse? He slapped on his blinding smile despite the tremor in his arms, and straightened like he owned the place. But Grant was already on top of it, charming the receptionist until she was gaping at him instead of Derek. "Hello," he said. "We have an appointment with August Green." The receptionist didn't take her eyes off Grant's face as she reached for the intercom on the desk phone and fumbled around until she hit the right button. "August?" she said. "There are some movie stars here to see you." This was awful. Derek considered running. Grant tilted his head and smiled again. "I'm Grant," he said. "Yeah," she said. "And this is my associate, Rex Lexington." Her eyes swiveled to Derek. "Hey," he said, lifting a hand in greeting. She stared at him. "And your name?" Grant asked. "Trish." "Trish," he repeated, rolling the word around like he was savoring it. Before Trish could pass out, the door separating the waiting room from the rest of the center opened, and August Green stepped out with red hair and a gray CCSS summer camp t-shirt. The sound of a million children screaming bolstered her along and made her entrance bigger than it really was. She exhaled and grinned like she'd just come from something hectic and was glad for a break. "Hello," she said. She looked between the two men, then zeroed in on Grant and offered her hand. "August," she said. "Grant." He did that thing where he took her hand in both of his own, letting his charm ooze all over the place. Derek rolled his eyes, shifting his weight. "And you must be Mr. Lexington," she said, extending her hand to him. "Please," he said. "Mr. Lexington was my father." She raised an eyebrow. "Sure he is. You two are early. We're just about to start setting up." The moon rose at 8:05. August told them to be there at 6. And it was 5. Derek said, "Grant's obnoxiously early to everything." "It's polite." "It's really not." August laughed. Trish was batting against August's thigh with the back of her fingers, trying to get her attention subtly, but failing. August shot her an annoyed look. Not a "stop making the celebrities feel uncomfortable" look, or a "please be cool" look. Those Derek had seen a million times. No, This was a "what is wrong with you" look. Meaning August didn't know who he was. Didn't know who they were. She didn't know. His lungs snagged, then loosened, releasing the jitter under his skin. "Let me show you around." She turned to the door, showing off a pair of yellow, kid-sized handprints on her lower back. She'd been hugged. Grant shot him a look, his eyes crinkling around the edges with barely controlled delight. Grant could get away with having his eyes sparkle. Derek tried to make his disgust with Grant's flirting as obvious as possible as they followed her into the center. But he was feeling significantly less disgusted than he would have liked, and his sour face only prodded Grant into a full-blown grin. The hallway wrapped around the main rec room that they could see through the long windows. It was decorated like a forest, with paper leaves and green streamers arching across the ceiling. There was a fake fire, with red streamers blown upward by a fan, and round gray pillows that looked like rocks surrounding it, where maybe the camp kids circled up to sing songs. It was cute. Camp, but in the city. There were a dozen kids all gathered around the table, stringing beads into bracelets. One harassed woman in a shirt just like August, but minus the paint, was leading the activity, mostly helping one of the little kids who was practically in her lap. The kid watched like she'd never seen beads before. She didn't look monstrous. None of them did. Not that Derek could see. It was unsettling. One of the kids looked up and saw them, then snatched up his work and ran out the door. He was probably about 9, skinny with a halo of afro. The woman watching them shouted after him, but August waved her off and bent down to smile at the kid. "I made friendship bracelets," he announced. "For the whole pack. This one's yours." "Thank you," she said, and secured it to her wrist with a couple easy tugs. She held it up to admire it. He had done some complicated knotwork with paracord, a silver charm dangling from the center. "The pack?" Derek asked, his coolness vanishing. "Like a werewolf pack? And you're in it?" August was a werewolf? He looked her up and down, trying to see it, to see himself in her. Did this mean he was signing up to be part of a pack? He didn't like the sound of that. August was calm as she answered, "Yes, the werewolf pack. Josh likes to consider support staff like me to be a part of it. This is Josh, by the way. Josh, this man is going to be playing a werewolf in a movie." The kid's eyes lit. "Whoa, really?" Derek grinned his best class star grin. He was a cool actor, doing cool actor things, and nothing was going to go wrong. "You smell like you play one in real life, too," the kid said. Derek's stomach vanished. It had just been kicked out of his body. If he looked down, he'd see a big gaping hole. Grant snorted and then started coughing to cover it. The traitor. How did the kid know? How? Did everyone know? Had he been deluding himself with secrecy the whole time? A hand squeezed his arm and he turned to see August. She looked up at him with sympathy, but still with a hint of a smile. She squeezed his arm again, then, convinced he wouldn't keel over, turned back to the kid. Josh, a fellow werewolf. He'd never met another werewolf, except for, well, the one. And this one was just a kid. Sweet Jesus, poor kid. Poor kid who knew his secret. "It was going to come out sometime tonight," she reminded him. "Easiest for everyone, Rex, to just get it over with. As I was saying, Josh, I'm giving him a tour." "Cool," Josh said. "You're going to like our pack. It's lots of fun. Everybody's real nice, and you'll be safer with us, too. Oh, here." Josh loosened up the bracelet on his wrist and grabbed Derek's hand, slipping it onto Derek's wrist and tightening the slip knot with gentle tugs. His little hands were dry and warm. The bracelet was twin of the one August wore, brown and green braided together so the green popped through the middle. And now with a closer look, he saw that the silver charm was a paw print. Derek didn't know what to do, so he said, "Thanks." The kid smiled. "I'm Josh." "Derek," he said. "I was class star for Halloween," Josh said. Because of course he was. And even though his world might be crumbling apart at the seams, even though his reputation might be garbage before he left the building, with this kid, he found himself back in familiar territory. "Oh yeah? Did you have the cape?" he asked. The kid rolled his eyes. "Of course I did, I'm not stupid." "Okay, Josh," August said. "I think you should go back now." Josh grumbled, but walked backwards until he reached the door to the rec room. Just before he slipped into the room, he shouted, "I'm glad you're here, Mr. Derek!" and ran off. Derek's fingers traced over the silver bead. There was a tightening in his sinuses. Grant and August were watching him, but it took him a while to spit out, "That kid's a werewolf." "Yeah," August said. "He's a good kid. Sweet. Tough." "How did..." He frowned, biting back the question. "How did it happen? How did he survive? How is he still so happy?" Derek breathed out a curse that his publicist would not like and ran a hand through his hair. Grant shook his head. "Just give it up," Derek huffed. He did better when he played a part. Better when he was the charming superhero, and no one mentioned wolves. He didn't know how to be honest about this. He pinned August with a look. She was waiting, patient, but expecting. "I'm Derek," he said, "and I'm a werewolf." "It's nice to meet you, Derek. Now how about that tour?" His thumb didn't stop spinning the silver bead. "Lead the way." The 20% True podcast is written and produced by me, Carolyn Rahman. Music was composed by Kamiku. If you like the show, please rate and review on iTunes. Follow the podcast on Facebook at facebook.com/20percenttrue, where you can leave comments and ask questions and leave pictures of your Captain Farragut cosplay. Check out my website, 20percenttrue.blogspot.com, for updates, thoughts on writing, and book reviews. Or follow me on Twitter at CarrieNTheHits.